We're talking today with State Representative Scott Biggs and State Representative Casey Murdoch. Scott, let's start with you, if we might. You're one of the underlying authors. You were the lead author on the House side of House Resolution 1012, which provided the authority to the governor and to the attorney general to develop the language, which has turned into State Question 777. Go back with me. You know, this was a multi-year battle to get this passed through the House and the Senate successfully.
This was actually a four-year battle to get this passed. It was one of the first things I filed when I was first elected back in 2013. And filed it, HJR 1006 back then, worked on it for 2 years, actually filed it again when we came back, and now it is State Question 777, and the voters in Oklahoma have a chance to put this in our Constitution this fall.
Opponents of State Question 777 have got kind of a laundry list of things that they're saying about it. One of the things they're saying, the origin of the language, they point to an out-of-state group that ALEC is the acronym of it, that they say is a dangerous organization, and they are opposed to a lot of things that they say should be near to dear hearts of citizens of Oklahoma.
You know, it's funny because we passed several ALEC bills here this last session, both Republicans and Democrats, but this was not one of them. This bill did not come from ALEC. ALEC has some model farm legislation dealing with nuisance laws, which we already have on the books, have had on the books for a while. They have nothing regarding a state amendment like this. This bill came from Oklahoma cattlemen, Oklahoma producers, Oklahoma associations that protect the interests of farmers. They did not come from out of state.
I know that, you know, you obviously you came very close in 2014 getting it completed. You actually got both bodies to agree to it, but there were some differences in language. You had to kind of do a little more refining in 2015.
That's correct. The House and the Senate both passed different versions, and we couldn't come to agreement in the conference committee. What came about was, you know, HJR 1012, which was the compromise language we worked on all summer, and that's why it passed, you know, overwhelmingly through the House and the Senate in the first few months there, the next legislative session.
I know that one of the things that's turned out to be a much discussed part of that 1012 compromise was the language that has to do with compelling state interest. How did that get added into this final mix?
You know, when we're talking about limiting the legislature from passing laws, we felt like they needed to have kind of a safeguard in place. You know, not to say we can't pass any laws. We wanted a safeguard that says we could pass laws if it met a compelling state interest. Compelling state interest has been defined as necessary for the health, safety, or the welfare of the public. It's a very similar language that's passed on every emergency bill up here at the Capitol that requires 68 votes. And it leaves us the option to react if we need to protect the health and the safety of the state.
The lead opponent for one of the groups that's involved in a vote no effort of State Question 777, former Attorney General Drew Edmondson. He's been quoted in a lot of different publications, one that's a local Oklahoma City publication, OKC Pets, making several claims about what this bill would end up doing, this constitutional amendment would end up doing if approved by the people. One, he keeps making reference to puppy mills and to cockfighting and saying that this would allow these entities to flourish if the state question was approved.
You know, that's something he knows that's an absolute false argument. He knows that, but he continues to put it out there because it tugs at emotion. It's false for two reasons. One is puppy mills and cockfighting is currently illegal in the state of Oklahoma. Has been on the books. This has a grandfather clause in the amendment that says that every law on the books, December 31st, 2014, remains on the books and there's nothing we can do about it. Those things stay in place and those protections stay in place. Secondly, when you're talking about puppy mills, those are not even included in agriculture. Agriculture is defined, you know, livestock, very narrowly. It does not include puppy mills. So that's false for two reasons. He's just using that as an excuse to get into a different market.
Water is another thing that we see a lot of talk about by both Mr. Edmondson, but also the other group that's involved in the opposition, Oklahoma Family Farms and Food, and that particular group has already got billboards out talking about that this will give agricultural interest free reign over however. What do they want to do about water in the state of Oklahoma? Does this got any truth to their claims, their charges?
That's absolutely another falsehood that the other side is spreading, and that's false for two reasons. First off is that water has been defined as a compelling state interest through the House, through the Senate. The governor actually signed that. So we're dealing with legislation dealing with water. It's already been determined to be a compelling state interest we can write bills on. Secondly is water quality standards are set by the EPA, the federal government. This is a state constitutional amendment that does nothing to trump, to go over the state, the federal government rules and regulations. Look at the waters of the U.S., the EPA bill that put out to regulate bar ditch and runoff from gutters. There states helpless in stopping that because that's a federal government rule that trumps everything we have. So EPA sets the water quality. Water's compelling state interest is false for two reasons. They're just trying to tug at emotions and get people riled up.
One of the arguments they've come back with on the water is that since it was a measure by the state legislature after the first of the year in 2016, that really, that the constitutional amendment basically nullifies it anyway, that it would still be a free-for-all in the courts.
Except for the fact that is you ask 9 out of 10 people if water's compelling state interest, aside from that that legislation, they're going to tell you yes. The state of Oklahoma has a compelling state interest to make sure we have healthy and safe drinking water. Mm-hmm. It's a compelling state interest without that legislation. That legislation just shows our intent and helps define it even more for the court.
So you think the court would likely look at that favorably?
They would have to.
When we start talking about some of the other arguments from the opponents of 777, we've heard from really almost the beginning of the ability of agriculture to pollute, the ability of treating animals inhumanely. These are all some of the things that we're hearing from folks who don't like 777 and want to defeat it.
That's right, and it basically comes down to a difference of philosophies. The other side wants us to do certain things with our livestock production that simply don't meet science, don't meet standards set out by Oklahoma State University and ag producers across the country. At the same time, if you look at who DEQ has fined in the past few months, it's not been farmers and ranchers for polluting the water. It's been cities and towns. Mm-hmm. Most recently, the city of Muskogee, which is ground zero for some of the opposition to the 777, was fined $10,000 for dumping raw sewage into a river and killing fish and polluting an Arkansas River tributary. It's not farmers and ranchers who are getting fined by DEQ. It's cities and towns who've been polluting some of this water. This bill is simply to put in place to protect Oklahoma producers 20, 30 years from now from these out-of-state special interest groups that are passing laws right now in California, in the East Coast, in Arizona, a state much more like Oklahoma than, pass some of these HSUS-sponsored laws in Arizona. So this is a preemptive bill to make sure that doesn't start here.
One final thing they have talked a great deal about, really all the way since some of the organized opposition started surfacing about a year ago now, that's the big versus little, the corporate agriculture versus family farms. It seems like they try to say that a vote for 777 is for corporate agriculture.
That's the exact opposite. If you look at, say, for example, California, which regulates agriculture more heavily than any other state in the country, what you see in California is a lot more corporate farms than you do family farms. Oklahoma is made up of 98% family farms, small family-owned operated farms. California, on the other hand, has so much litigation, so many rules, that the only people that can produce in Oklahoma and California are the big corporations who can absorb those additional costs. Take, for example, the bill that was passed last week requiring cattle producers to reduce methane gas by 40% by 2030. Well, the cow-calf operator that has 100 heads is not going to be able to meet that rule, whereas some corporate farm can absorb that and pass the cost on to customers a lot more easily. So it's the exact opposite of what they're saying is actually going to happen. And that's why a group of us today actually started sending letters to producers in California, asking them to consider Oklahoma, that while their state continues to legislate the small operators out of business, we'd welcome them coming here to Oklahoma to take a look at what we have to offer and take a look at how we want to protect agriculture for future generations.
Representative Biggs, let's talk about one of the claims that Attorney General Edmondson has talked about, the fact that he believes that this just leads to a tremendous amount of litigation ahead of us over what compelling state interest is, what should be regulated under this constitutional amendment.
You know, and that's the society we live in. You know, we have a lot of people nowadays that are anxious to sue the government. I mean, we see it every day. People filing lawsuits against our legislation, against our practices. That's why we've done some bills protecting agriculture. We had the agritourism bill from a couple of years ago that actually limited liability and says you can't sue absent gross negligence. So we've actually taken steps to stop the trial attorneys that are very sue happy nowadays. Now, in regarding to the right to farm, I don't see that to be the case, because what it does is say the legislature can't pass laws without a compelling state interest. That puts an additional burden on the lawmakers passing these laws in the future. Mm-hmm. So what they have is, you know, right now, if we want to pass a bill with emergency, it requires 68 votes. Emergency says health, safety, welfare of the public. Basically, it's just an additional hurdle for the legislature to go through when they're passing these laws. But this, as you know, we can't stop somebody from suing. But what this does is stops the bills in the process before it ever gets on the books and gets to a lawsuit stage.
Casey, you're obviously from the panhandle, from agriculture country. And you feel pretty strongly about this big versus little argument that's going around.
I do. And like Representative Biggs just said, these regulations, if they come into Oklahoma, HSUS, and push regulations, it hurts the small farmer a lot more than it hurts the corporate farms. I run 150 mama cows. There are regulations that could be pushed that would put me out of business, that I could not operate. We have to look forward. Whenever I first ran, I wanted to legislate 20 years down the road. Right now, today, we have a strong rural caucus here at the Capitol. What will the face of the Capitol look like 20 years from now? We protect agriculture right now, today, at this Capitol. We redistrict every time we do a census, and we lose rural legislators. 777 will protect agriculture, rural Oklahoma, 20 years from now. But we have to look after the small farmer, and 777 does that.